Yeah, a lot of times I will talk for 10 or 15 minutes, and I can do that again this morning. But just in case somebody wants to call, if they have a very pressing question they want to ask or a concern, maybe you have a family or a loved one that's just not feeling well right now, and you want to do what you can to help them. Well, I would love to be part of the equation in whatever capacity I can help you. I would love to do that. Now, I have made many observations about people. Most of them are very, very simple observations. Sometimes a person will refuse every organized source of encouragement to help them get well and regain their health. Their reliance may be more so on, traditional, medical intervention. And this would be the type of visit where maybe you sit down with a physician and it may be 5 minutes of face-to-face contact, and the majority of the 5 minutes just might be hearing your symptoms and then just writing down a drug prescription. Well, I'm not here to be argumentative this morning or to be contentious, but I want to ask you a question. Do drugs always work when it comes to healing the body? And what is it about a drug that heals the body? Well, one example that I think of, if a person had a raging infection in their body, well, I would probably come as close as possible to calling that a cure if they were administered antibiotics. So if a person's got double pneumonia and they feel like they're about to die, I think it is a great idea to take advantage of antibiotics if that is the option that you have. Now, we're not talking about what you would do to heal your lungs, but we're just talking about trying to kill off the toxic germ or the microbe that's growing inside of you that's just about to kill you. So, yeah, if you recover from that, I mean, wouldn't you say that antibiotics have worked wonders? Yeah. I don't want to use the word miracle because that would conjure up the idea that it was something that couldn't be explained. But, they're just near miraculous sometimes, right? All right. There was an article that I read not that long ago, and I want to read it to you one more time because I've had several people make comments to me. And let's just cover this topic briefly because I want to give you an idea. Just think about this. Lord willing, you will never develop cancer, but what if you do? Let me read this to you. Researchers from the United Kingdom have just made a major breakthrough in cancer research by demonstrating for the first time that curcumin, which is a turmeric extract, not only is an effective adjunct agent to enhance conventional chemotherapy, but may even be more effective on its own. Curcumin has also been found to be about 100 times less toxic than chemotherapy. That may be an understatement, folks. And it was more effective at killing colorectal cancer stem cells from patients than a popular combination of the conventional drugs. I don't suspect that you got what I just said right there, but it said it kills cancer stem cells. Chemotherapy is very effective at killing cancer cells, but it is not effective at killing the source of cancer cells, which would be the cancer stem cells. This is one of the reasons why, if a person is treated aggressively for, let's just say, breast cancer or colon cancer, that, around the 5-year mark, sometimes earlier, sometimes a little bit later, like 6 or 7 years, the doctor has pronounced them completely cured, can't even find a cancer or tumor or any place that it may have metastasized or spread to at the 5-year mark, only to have them the very next week go to the doctor and they say you're completely covered up with cancer again. That's because chemotherapy is not effective at killing what are called the cancer stem cells. Maybe we would call that the root of the cancer. Now, this article was published in September 2015 in the journal Cancer Letters. The study evaluated curcumin as a possible adjunct to enhance chemotherapy treatment of colorectal cancer. Their curcumin was able to inhibit what is known as spheroid formation, A configuration of cells that indicates cancer progression was driven by cancer stem cells. This and other curcumin activities indicate that curcumin is capable of targeting the stem cells at the heart of many cancer malignancies. Very interesting, if you ask me. Given the results of the new study, shouldn't curcumin be considered the first-line treatment itself? In the meantime, a growing population, meaning I took some curcumin this morning, by the way. In the meantime, a growing population is taking their health into their own hands, which is the smartest strategy of all. And they're finding ways to prevent and even treat cancer through dietary interventions and related natural approaches such as supplementing with curcumin or turmeric or curry. Now, I'm trying to think, where is the other one that I just found here? This one was interesting also. Well, I thought I had it marked. I don't. I'll be right there, though. I've got to be close. Oh, here it is, right here. This one comes from A.J. Gold, Ph.D., co-author of the Curcumin Chemosensitizes 5-fluoracil. I'm sorry. That's just too much right here. This is the abstract right here. Our research found that curcumin was able to ignite the body's own tumor suppression activity and to keep a cancerous tumor from growing and spreading. How do you like that? Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, I'm great. How are you, Dr. Morgan?
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Thanks for your call.
I've tried many times to get through. This is the first time that I've reached you.
And really? Well, the third time's a charm.
Yes. My question has to do with atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. My heart has been in atrial fibrillation since 2011. And I'm going to be 79 years old here in just a few days this month. And I'm an aging athlete. I still play Senior Olympics basketball. And I've noticed that as I'm aging here, I'm having less and less endurance on the court. And I just wondered, the primary medication I take for it is Cardia, which is diltiazem, 180 milligram dosage. And it really basically slows the heart a little bit and keeps the pulse rate from racing away.
Is your name Bill Walton?
I only wish. No.
No, you're probably the best version of yourself.
I'm afraid so.
What time do you go to bed at night?
Actually, I go to bed about 9 o'clock, and usually read for up to 30 minutes, and then I'm usually asleep by 9:30.
So once you lay your head on the pillow, how long does it take to drift off into a sleep?
Not long. I'm always asleep, probably within 10 minutes of trying to go to sleep.
Good.
I do wake up, of course, several times a night, as us older guys are prone to do, and use the bathroom.
Well, and you're beating me to the punch, because you already know where I was heading with this. I'm talking about the neurological tone of the body.
Mm-hmm.
This is a quick story from yesterday. It's probably not relevant to you, but a woman came to see me with her husband. And, you know, she probably brought him against his will, maybe at gunpoint. I don't know, because I didn't see her carry a .357 Magnum as he walked in the door, but I just assumed, you know, that was how she got him in there.
Right.
And he was, he made several comments like, I just don't think there's any way that I'm going to get better, and I just have zero motivation and desire, which is not your case at all. But I've lost my appetite for food. I just don't feel right. But to make a long story short, you have to have enough vitamin B1. Sometimes it's called thiamine. If you want to use a synthetic version, I don't. I always use natural sources, which usually come from calf liver. But if I use those, I'm just trying to institute some tone to the nervous system so your parasympathetic nervous system can work better.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, I just gave him two supplements after I examined him. And the first supplement was just a natural form of B vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have a certain amount of B vitamins to make sure that your stomach can digest food properly and that your gallbladder can work. The gallbladder may be the most parasympathetically innervated organ in the body, which is resting and digesting. And go backwards slightly, your kidneys aren't supposed to be making urine all night long. They're supposed to be resting right along with you. So for a lot of people, all I have to do is just give B vitamins, and it gives greater neurological tone to the bladder where they don't even have to get up. Mm-hmm. And I realize yours may be a prostate issue. That would be a separate. But you got nothing to lose. What if we gave you some natural source of vitamin B1 and you told me, you know what, not only am I not getting up at night to go to the bathroom to urinate, but my heart really, really seems to like that a lot. Because it's very, very common with a B vitamin deficiency to have AFib.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, okay. Which I mean, take everything I'm saying with a grain of salt. Don't take it as the gospel. But so that's one thing. The other thing that I gave the man was an adaptogen. And maybe the loose definition of adaptogen is anything that would tend to target and strengthen that part of the nervous system that innervates the adrenal glands. Because when the adrenal glands, they have a little bit of a hair trigger and you overproduce what's called adrenaline, You are going to wake up multiple times a night. You're going to form more urine.
Mm-hmm.
If I had my way, even at the age of 79, you would go to sleep deeply and soundly and not really wake up.
Right.
I mean,
That'd be my choice.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have a problem with you turning over in bed if you need to change positions. I mean, surely Playing basketball, you have the occasional bruise on a muscle and you need to shift positions. Is that right?
Without a doubt.
Now, when you go up to slam on Bill Walton, does he ever stuff it right back in your... I'm joking.
Right. I only wish. I've played below the rim my entire career.
And so there's two or three things that I'm going to think about, and these are just simple ideas. With atrial fib, I almost always have to lower cortisol levels and I have to lower adrenaline levels. And so some of the ways you can do that, your body requires magnesium and potassium as kind of gatekeepers to make sure that adrenaline doesn't build up to excess. So with AFib, I mean, it's easy to say that's always a magnesium deficiency. So take it with a grain of salt. I always think that I need those calming, relaxing B vitamins to help prevent the body from producing excess adrenaline. Now, on the flip side of the coin, when somebody has a lot of adrenaline, usually they're very, very creative people. Would you call yourself Mr. Vivid Imagination and Creativity?
That part of my activity is probably also slowed with age. But
did you
yes.
used to be a little bit more creative?
Yes, without a doubt.
Well, you sound like your mind is just super sharp this morning. I'm really impressed with you.
Well,
I mean, I'm 78, and you sound sharper than me.
I tell people, for a person of my age and condition, I'm in pretty good shape.
For the condition you're in, right?
Right.
Well, those are things that I want you to look at. Now, it's been my experience that what you eat in the morning, it has everything to do. So sometimes if a person has blood type O or blood type A, even if they have just a little bit of coffee in the morning, that's enough to kind of throw their blood sugar out of whack for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not everybody, but that's just some people that I found. Just like a woman this week, she told me, if I have just a half a cup of coffee, I do just fine. But if I exceed that, let's just say she goes to two cups of coffee and then she has a glass of tea in the afternoon, she said, forget about it. I will not sleep well that night. I'll get up multiple times to urinate. So maybe if I say this in reverse, the ability to determine how well you're doing is going to be based on how many times you get up and go to the bathroom at night. And so usually, what I'm after is I'm trying to calm down the adrenal glands so there's not so much adrenaline production. Now, when you wake up in the night to go to the bathroom, is it just like for 2 minutes you wake up, go to the bathroom, and come back to bed and pass out again?
Most of the time, that's the way it is. Occasionally, if I have something going on that I'm worried about, I'll put that in my mind when I go back to bed, and I might be an hour before I get back to sleep, but that's rare.
You know what? I've completely changed my mind what I was going to tell you. I'm going to start over again, all right?
Okay.
If I had AFib and my pulse rate was out of control, I would ask myself a couple of questions. Okay, what am I eating right here? And as a general rule, people that eat lower carbohydrates, they have their largest meal of the day at breakfast, they do much better than those that don't. I can tell you historically that when people eat donuts for breakfast and drink Cokes, they probably have more AFib.
Right.
You know what a lady told me? This next Monday will be 2 Mondays ago. And I kind of thought it was humorous, but a woman came to see me. And let's just say she's close to 80 years old, because I don't want anybody thinking that I'm talking about somebody else here. And I think she's healthy, but she just had a couple of little things that she wanted to try to work on to improve herself. But when I asked her, I said, okay, now what do you eat for breakfast? And she tells me, she goes, you know what, I don't want to tell you. I said, well, why not? And she said, because I'm afraid you're going to make fun of me like everybody else does. And I said, I'm not going to make fun of you. So, she was reeling me in. She had me really piqued on what is she eating? And she said, okay, I'm just going to tell you. I have one of two different breakfasts, but I'm just going to tell you, when I eat this breakfast, I'm on an even keel all day long. I feel good physically. I don't crave sweets or chocolate or junk food. And I'm going, this is going to be interesting. I wonder what it is. And she said, it's either chicken salad or tuna fish salad. I said, bingo, I like that.
That's a good breakfast, yeah.
Well, I know it's not a traditional breakfast.
Right.
But if you can wrap your mind around that, just think of it this way. The protein that you have at the start of the day is just then going to be available to be utilized for healing and repair when you go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
I just read an article before I went on the air about people that have low-protein diets. They have more strokes than those that eat adequate protein or just enough protein. I know you can go overboard with protein, but I liked what she said. She said, I don't get hungry and I don't snack. Now, this is just a side topic. If a person wants to develop diabetes, I recommend you start snacking in between meals.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to put incredible stress and strain on the insulin. And if I had my way, I would have your blood sugar somewhere between maybe 70 to 80 points or milligrams per deciliter of blood sugar or glucose. If that's the case, I bet you won't even get up to urinate at all. It takes the stress off the prostate. It takes the stress off the bladder. It takes stress off the ureters. That's one of the reasons why when you start reading research about people that have diabetes, they almost always have a vitamin B1 deficiency or a thiamine deficiency. And thiamine is just so critical to helping the nervous system establish proper neurological tone. It calms the bladder. It also calms the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the formulations that I use when people come to see me that have AFib, and I know this is not going to sound impressive because it's made from calf heart. That's probably one of my most favorite supplements to give someone because in this calf heart extract, it contains what are called protomorphogen compounds. And these are like I started to call them nuclear vitamins. That would be correct, but that's a little bit too wordy right there. It's almost like the perfect blueprint or template to tell your heart to be in good repair and to work properly.
But calf heart extract.
Yeah, that's all it is, calf heart. Or if you want to go to the butcher shop today and say, I'd like a nice heart, please. I mean, you can cut it up and make a stew out of it. I've actually had more people brag about the taste of their stew when they have calf heart than almost anything else.
Mm.
Unless it was Jimmy Downs roast. That would be different. But that's one of the things that you're looking at. The other thing that is just going to neurologically provide great tone to your heart, it's called Hawthorne.
Yes, I do take Hawthorne.
Excellent.
In fact, I was going to tell you the other supplements that I take just for information. There's a chat room kind of thing online for AFib patients, and they share various things they've tried. And one of the things is BCAA plus G, which is branched-chain amino acids plus L-glutamine.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you can't surpass calf heart extract.
No, I'm sure.
Perfect. There's your branched chain amino acids right there.
That's in the calf heart. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. And then L-carnitine and hawthorn berry and taurine. And
yeah,
I take all of those.
Well, I love all those things.
Yeah, cool.
One of the heart's primary sources of energy is fat. It loves to convert fat into energy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you need to play with things like avocados. I can tell right now you're going to resist what I can say because I'm good at reading people on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But if I tried to force you at gunpoint to eat a steak with melted butter on top of it, you would not like that, would you?
I'd just devour it. I'd love it.
Wow, that worked out better than I thought.
Yeah, and I eat avocados regularly, too.
Oh, you're a good man. Let me go backwards. When I mentioned coffee, I didn't hear any comments from you.
Well, I am very careful about that. I do have typically a cup of coffee, but it's at half strength. I basically make very weak coffee and just have one cup of weak coffee in the morning.
Why do you make it weak?
Because all my reading says that caffeine is bad for AFib.
Okay.
So it's just to reduce the caffeine content.
Yeah, and you realize in some people, caffeine can cause an elevation of blood sugar. Either it's through the mechanism of causing your adrenaline to go up, And so, as a general rule, do you know what it's like to be very calm on the inside and feel pretty happy and joyous and just feel like $1 million?
I remember those days, yes.
Well, do you know what it's also like to be maybe be just a little bit, I don't want to say angst, but just a little bit nervous or jittery on the inside?
Slightly wired. Actually, ever since I've had AFib, I've had that feeling more often than not.
Well, see, that's adrenaline right there. Mm-hmm. That's adrenaline. That's why I told you the story about the man who's... And, of course, I always ask people to give me feedback because I think that's more valuable than a lab test. Because if a person calls you back and says, you know what, this is the best I've ever done, I feel fabulous, then bingo, we're in business. Mm-hmm. But all I used was just a B vitamin and an adaptogen.
And adaptogens... talk to me about adaptogen. What is that?
Adaptogens are going to be herbs that have a natural, God-given ability to help nourish and strengthen and repair the adrenal glands.
Okay.
And the adrenals are going to be broken down into two parts. You have what's called the adrenal cortex. That's the outside of it. So if somebody, that's where cortisol comes from. So if somebody produces way too much cortisol, I don't want you thinking I'm picking on women, but since you're a man, I'm going to use a woman as my example. If a woman has way, way, way too much cortisol coursing through her veins throughout the day, then what she's going to have is she's going to have a very enlarged face. The face will become much bigger. Her chest is going to become much bigger, but she's probably going to maintain a very small lower body. It's almost like instead of a pear shape, it's almost reverse where it's heavier on top and smaller, you know, from the hips down. That's going to be too much cortisol. Now, it's inside the adrenal glands. That's called the adrenal medulla. That's the source of adrenaline. And I think there's a whole bunch of studies that demonstrate that as we age, we tend to have more and more adrenaline coursing through our veins. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. But what I'm trying to point out is that there's probably not anything harder on the body than adrenaline.
Right.
One of the reasons why a doctor might recommend a blood pressure medication like Hyzaar or... Have you ever heard of blood pressure pills called beta blockers?
Yes, I've heard of them.
Well, what they do is they block adrenaline. They're called beta adrenergic receptor blockers.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times for AFib, that's one of the main things that a doctor will use. They'll also use a calcium channel blocker.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of those before?
Yes, I've heard of them.
And so in nature, magnesium ends up being a natural channel canal. Did I butcher that? Can I start over?
Yes.
Magnesium is going to be one antidote to blocking the excess development of, or deposition of calcium. So anytime that you have too much calcium, you have too much electrical excitability of the heart. Adrenaline tends to kind of drive that. That's why I asked you about the coffee earlier and how you feel on the inside. So if you tell me your sleep starts to resolve itself or you don't get up at all, I mean, you will have to go to the bathroom in the morning, obviously, right?
Right, right, no doubt.
And that would be normal. Mm-hmm. But you just don't want to get up four times a night or two times a night or three times a night.
Yeah, it's typically two.
Typically two. But you'd like to whittle that down to one within a week and then zero after that, right?
I'd be pleased with zero, Dr. Morgan. That'd be great.
And sometimes what I'll do is I'll try to bolster what's called GABA aminobutyric acid levels. And sometimes I can do that with giving just a little bit of calcium and magnesium before bedtime. Other ways of doing it is giving a little bit of protein to a person. So when I told the story about the lady having chicken salad for breakfast, that wasn't because I realized there's going to be a lot of people listening that if I mention that, they're going to make a face and they're going to think, well, that's not a traditional breakfast food. I need my frosted flakes or whatever they might say. But if you're willing to think outside of the box, all you can do is just put it to the test. Or it doesn't even have to be that. If you told me you want a salmon fillet served to you on a silver platter with a salad in the morning, I'll take that too. But anything to get you started in a little bit different direction, because what you need is you need that protein at breakfast to help aid your body in making all those neurotransmitters.
So eggs are a good breakfast. You don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then what about oatmeal? If you have a few slices of cheese with it,
I'm good with that too. And again, you're just going to try to find the right combination that serves you. So, what if, for example, you had tuna fish salad for breakfast?
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is say, "Okay, did I feel better with this, or did I feel better with a stack of pancakes from from Denny's?"
Yeah.
Anyway, that's one idea right there. But the adaptogens, going back to that topic, that can be everything from an herb called rhodiola. That can be ashwagandha. Sometimes it's called withania. Those are adaptogens. It can be ginseng. I mean, there's just a bunch to choose from, but usually ashwagandha, rhodiola, those, Shizandra, those are, sounds like a person's name, doesn't it? Hey,
yeah,
Shizandra, what's going down?
Right.
But Shizandra is an adaptogen. A lot of times I like using either rhodiola or Shizandra if a person has feelings of just being overwhelmed or overly stressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I probably simplify everything way too much, but if a woman walks in the door, she says, I can't take it anymore. I'm just ready to give up. I've got nothing left in the tank. If I have one more thing happen to me, I have reached my limit. I'm going, okay, this is a rhodiola Shizandra case right here. But it's always my dream and my desire to get them to the point where they don't even require that. So we're trying to restore balance.
Right.
But all I gave that man that said, I don't care about anything anymore, don't want to do anything, I just do nothing and sit in my chair all day long. I've lost my taste for food. I've lost a lot of weight. It was just an adaptogen and just natural B vitamins,
mm-hmm.
which okay. I'm kind of hesitant to tell you what they're made from because you might throw up if I say calf liver. Well, you won't, but other people.
Yeah, calf liver would be fine with me. In fact, I'll start eating more calf liver.
Which, you know, one of the things that's, I realize I'm switching over to talking about women now. You know that one thing that makes a woman is she tends to produce greater amounts of a substance called progesterone. It's just mm-hmm. a natural female hormone, whereas you're Mr. Testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, progesterone has got to be one of the most fabulous remedies to too much adrenaline of all time. It's just fabulous.
Mm.
I don't know that I completely understand every chemical angle on it, but sometimes it can be such a fast changer of the human body. But progesterone is very calming and soothing to the heart when there's too much adrenaline.
Hmm.
And so what we're into is repairing and healing. Now, I can tell you what my suspicions are. Doesn't mean that I'm right. I'm suspicious that you're having highs and lows of your blood sugar in the middle of the night, and that's what's making you wake up and go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And so that's just a guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do I know? I mean,
well, you know a lot more than me.
Well, I don't even know. Well, what's your
That's area? Why I called.
What's your area of expertise, though?
Physics.
Physics? Man, you're my kind of guy.
Physics background. Education.
If you told me we're going to go to physics class today, I'll get out my pencil and pen and we'll start taking notes.
Okay, cool.
But I don't think we could get anybody else to do what we would.
No, probably. We'd be alone.
Well, do these things sound good to you?
Yes, I do take a vitamin B100, which is a complex of B vitamins, but that's all. So I should get this thiamine B1 and supplement with it.
Well, if you get it from a natural source, I mean, I can almost tell you right now, you're going to say, why didn't somebody tell me about this?
Mm.
This works so much better with my body. And that's based on the research that when somebody takes a synthetic B vitamin that's probably made from corn or from coal tar, your body tries to kick it out as quick as possible. The proof is in the pudding because you go to the bathroom and you have neon fluorescent yellow urine, whereas you didn't before.
Right.
So your body's trying to kick it out, but when it comes to natural vitamins, your body is jealous or covetous for them. It wants them. It wants to hold on to them.
Gotcha.
But the synthetic ones, it kind of flushes and washes out. Now, the other nutrient that I want to talk to you about just briefly, there's two of them. The fat-soluble form of vitamin K that's called vitamin K2, not K1, not K3, not K4, 5, 6, 7, 8, but vitamin K2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's something right there that can be a good aid to what you're doing if you're not taking K2 already, because K2...
I just started, actually.
Well, look at you, Mr.
I had read something about K2 that I thought, that sounds like I need that, and so I have my first bottle right now.
Man, you are a genius.
Well, not really.
The other substance that I find, and like anything else, you're trying to find out at what dose do I seem to get the biggest bang for the buck, but it's called inositol hexaphosphate.
Mm.
And that's something that can greatly, greatly help you.
That's not IP6, is it?
It is IP6.
Okay.
Man, I can't even tell you anything you don't know already.
Well, no, yeah, you can. I'm not taking IP6. I did take one bottle of it, and I didn't seem to notice much difference.
Well, and you know what my experience has been? And just take everything I'm saying just very, very loosely. Don't make it into like a real deep conversation. But if I give IP6 to a person, if I don't get the desired results, sometimes I'll just simply try doubling it.
Oh,
and they almost, I'm not saying all the time, but they almost always call me within a few days and say, okay, now it's working.
Okay.
Because
okay.
it's, you know, it's dose dependent, and, you know, sure. I can't determine how everybody's going to respond.
Right.
So a lot
Everybody's
of times,
different, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I just start off with just a very low dose, and I tell them, listen, if you're not 100% pleased and happy, you just call and complain to all-pro basketball player and complain. That
okay.
was you, not me.
Right.
But,
I'll,
yeah, you should really consider that. But what we need to do is, if you were to go to a doctor and have your blood sugar checked, I bet you it's going to be up in the 90s, maybe the upper 90s even.
Okay, I'll.
Or do you know what your blood sugar is?
No, but I probably have it in a file. I have my blood lipid profile stuff in a file.
And, well, when you go to your blood lipid profile, there's one very specific marker found on your cholesterol. It's called VLDL. So when you see the one that says LDL, that stands for low-density lipoprotein. When you see the one that says HDL, that means high-density lipoprotein. But the one that would be probably very interesting in your case
mm-hmm.
is going to be called VLDL, and that stands for very low-density lipoprotein.
Okay.
When you find that marker is at 21 or above, that's when you're probably forming plaque or calcifications in the heart at faster rate than what you want.
Gotcha.
So we want to reverse that and turn that around.
Gotcha.
All right. I sure hope I've helped you.
Well, you have, and I appreciate it very much, Dr. Morgan. Thank
you're welcome.
You
have a good day.
Spent with me. You have a blessed day.
Oh, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. There's a phone line officially open. You're welcome to call in. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I always appreciate a person's persistence. He didn't give up. Third time was a charm. So if you want to call me now, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. If you haven't heard this program before, well, it's called Health Essentials. And obviously, I want to spend whatever time or energy that we have on finding real remedies that will actually heal your body. Do not ever take for granted the ability of the body to heal. God designed it that way. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Let me get away from my computer.
Okay.
A couple of questions for you today. Stuffy nose. I know it's allergy season. I know you've addressed it in the past. I can't find my notes on it. Can you address?
Well, what time of day is your nose stuffy? First thing in the morning when you wake up? Or
24/7.
That kind of narrows it down, doesn't it? Now, are your sinuses, are they kind of swollen and inflamed too? Does your face hurt? Do you have drainage going down the back of your throat?
No.
All right.
It's stuffy nose.
All right, let me
get and I've done in the past some castor oil with a drop of Melaleuca in it.
And does that help?
It does help, but it's short-lasting, of course. It's short-lasting, and then I can put Flonase. You know, Flonase seems to go up a little higher and gives me relief a little bit longer.
Well, that's because they put a turbocharger on it. It, like, shoots it up with great force. let me ask you a question. If this were during the summertime and you were driving down a country road and a farmer or a rancher had just cut hay, would that kind of set you off and make you stuffy?
I don't know. I feel like I've been stuffy my whole life.
All right, if you went into an older person's house, I realize I could get in trouble for this. I'm not trying to, though.
If
there was, like, a lot of dust in there and maybe mold, would that really set you off also?
Honestly, I don't think so because I've been stuffy my whole life.
All right,
so now that we're saying all this, it has to be a food allergy.
Okay, well, you're still on the right track. I was just trying to see if I could get some clue, so let me just lay out a couple different ideas. And it doesn't mean any of them are going to prove to be true, but still I want to try. When someone reacts to pollen, now this is just my thought on this, so it can be questioned by all the experts, but sometimes I think what they're really reacting to is the mold or the fungal spore that's attached to the pollen.
It's not like
I can take a swab of your nose and pull the pollen out and then say, hey, would you look at this? There's a bunch of mold spores right on the pollen, just piggybacking a ride, floating in the air like a piece of flower falling from a sifter above the trees all over the yard. So that's what I think of. And so let me give you two or three different ideas, and you tell me if they prove to be beneficial for you. Number one. I'm a firm believer that if you're having a reaction to mold, that maybe baking soda might be one of the might be a very good remedy. So when you use castor oil and the tea tree oil and you get a benefit, that makes me think you're killing mold spores or fungus. Doesn't mean I'm right about that.
Okay.
But there's
this is making sense. Okay.
Well, there's a product that they sell at Drug Emporium and probably other stores like the Granary. It's called NasoPure. And I like it because it's just so easy to use. A lot of times I judge products and therapies based on how easy it is for people to use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably one of the reasons why I don't recommend a whole lot of books on the radio or in person, because it doesn't matter how much enthusiasm I have for it. I'm going to get the same thing from every person. Dr. Morgan, I just wasted my money on that book. Well, did you read it? No, it's just sitting there on the table. I'm going, well, great, because it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does for a rare few people. I might get one person out of 100 to say, that was a great book, Dr. Morgan. I love this therapy. It was kind of complex, but I did it. No, it's got to be simple stuff. So sodium bicarbonate or baking soda, that's one of the ingredients in that product called NasoPure. It's so easy to use. Even a kid could use it. But I think if you tried that several times a day, that might greatly, greatly aid you or help you. Now, instead of using the FloNase, there's an herb called Albizia.
Spell?
Oh, great. Now I've got to spell it.
A-L-B-E-Z-E-A.
A-L-B-I-Z-I-A.
Okay.
I'm thinking. I hope I spelled that right.
They'll
that,
get it.
That sometimes is one of the most effective herbal treatments of all time for turning off allergic responses to mold and to fungus and to pollen. Obviously, there's probably 30 people listening right now going, tell them about local honey or bee pollen. Well, you could try that too, and if it works,
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't, then probably what I'm after, if there's continual stuffiness and sinus problems, I just almost always find that the culprit is down in the colon.
Well, so with us talking, that's what popped into my head, because I just had a pedicure, and one of my toenails is going bad. And I thought, that's weird.
Well,
I've never had a fungal
infection.
In
what way, though? Yeah.
It's discolored. It's just not...
Well, if
as
it's
pretty
if
it, looking as the other one,
it's, right? But it's not thick and white yet, is it?
No, but it's got that yellowy. I'm looking
well,
at it right
but
now.
That doesn't necessarily mean a fungus. That just may mean very, very poor lymphatic drainage. So, if that's on the right big toe,
I mean, it is.
I do this all day long. I sound like a broken record to myself. But if I press into the big toe and it's not tender on the left side, but I touch the right one and it's excruciatingly tender at a certain joint or along that first ray, I think. Liver. And, you know, your liver is one of the greatest filters of the body. So when you start to see a yellowing, or maybe what I would call like a light browning color of the toenail,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my mind just says, Roy, take a look at the liver. And the liver is the filter that takes everything off the colon. So, I don't know. It's a toss-up right now. I mean, you could go get nettle tea. You know, it comes from bull nettles. That sometimes is a great aid. But it may be that if you're waking up wide awake at 1 o'clock in the morning, you can't fall back to sleep, you're having some pretty good toxic reactions within your liver and your bowels, and we need to kind of address that.
Okay.
And I can almost guarantee you want me to do a perfect full workup for you on the air right now, right?
Nope, I'm coming in next week.
Well,
I'm coming in next week. I hope you
but
have an opening.
In the meantime, what you can do is you can start tackling this with some dandelion tea every day.
Okay.
And I can tell you right now, mold loves sugar more than anything else. So
I gave up sugar for Lent.
Oh,
yes.
Well,
it's been a little bit hard, but...
Did you see a benefit?
Not so much yet. I mean, no cravings or anything, but...
All right. Well, let's talk.
No weight loss. That was the other thing I was going to say. You have fungal, doesn't that contribute to stubborn weight loss?
Yeah, it can, because it can keep your hormones in complete disarray. But some of the ways to tackle this are, number one, we have to bring back balance to blood sugar. Number two, actually, I'm trying to decide I want to switch gears again. Sorry about that. What if I talked about foods that might be potential sources of mold and fungus?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you know what peanuts are?
Yes, I don't eat them.
Okay. What about corn?
Yes, I eat it. Corn chips. Mexican food.
Well, Mexican food? What is that? I've never heard of that. Can you describe it to me? But you're talking about the tortilla chips they serve.
Right.
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, some of the...
But no, other than that, no corn that I'm totally aware of, unless it's hidden in something.
Exactly. And that's usually the way it is, because they have a way of putting corn into everything. Even if I fill up with gas in a little bit, it's going to have corn in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Called ethanol. Well, some of the most bizarre, strange cases that I ever see that they call, before they come in, they'll say, no one can solve my issue. It's impossible. I've been everywhere. I've been to the top experts. Sometimes it can be very, very simple in that they have a chronic mold or a corn allergy problem.
Mm.
Now, I don't want to say allergy in the traditional sense. It's not like you have a little bit of corn and all of a sudden you're running to the hospital because you're going into anaphylactic shock.
It's a sensitivity.
Yeah, there was a gentleman recently that said, if I take this supplement, I think it was like magnesium, I don't want to take it because I'll go into anaphylactic shock. And I thought, it's magnesium. How are you going to go into I've never heard of that before.
Mm-hmm.
But corn, they have a way of working it into almost everything. I mean, for all I know, when you do eat Spam every day, don't you? I know you don't.
Every day.
Uh-huh. But they have a way of just working corn into almost everything. It can be in chewing gum. If you ever look at a vitamin bottle and it says ascorbic acid on it, you can bet your bottom dollar that's corn right there.
Really?
Yeah, that's all it's made from.
Oh, my gosh.
If it just says vitamin C, then the term ascorbic acid, I'm guessing there's I'm going to say 90% corn. Some of it might be sago or something like that, or palm. But no, that's just almost always corn, always a corn source.
Wow.
Chewing
gum. I've been listening to JJ Virgin Diet. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
She has you eliminate 7 irritants from your body.
Is corn one of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how
mm-hmm.
about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sugar, flour, corn, peanuts, dairy. And she tries to see how, and then introduce one at a time.
Well, that doesn't leave anything other than steaks and sweet potatoes and avocados and beets.
That's exactly
and celery
right.
And so-
mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, we got a lot of food to eat. You could eat a ton of stuff, just not, it's just the packaged stuff that probably has corn in it. It's just going to, it's very, very, and there's no way I can, quote, prove it to you over the radio. You're just going to have to tell me you believe what I'm saying, because fungal toxins are real.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of problems that occur that people have, weird symptoms. I would say weird, bizarre neurological symptoms when they have fungal or mold toxins from corn.
What would be a weird symptom?
Well, okay. When I say neurological, what if you were to tell me that your brain were continually foggy, that it wasn't clear? That you have a hard time focusing and concentrating, and you feel like that your mental capacity is diminishing, even though all your family members and friends always rely on you to be the brains of the family. So that would be one way right there. And I would say other ones is just constant irritation.
Mm.
Now, I know that doesn't describe anybody I'm thinking of right now, but some people have just a little bit of a hair trigger, and they feel like they could be a little bit over-the-top irritable or cranky with others. I have a little girl looking at me right now. Well, now she's starting to smile. Oh, no, okay, now she is smiling. But sometimes people, they can start becoming just a little bit more angry. And you know what a man told me this week? And I got to tell you, I was really, really impressed with him. He said, I don't know what I'm doing drinking Dr. Pepper's. He said, I don't know if I'm just playing around here, but when he told that, I could tell in his eyes he had this deep conviction that he really, really wanted to stop doing that. But then again, isn't that high fructose corn syrup?
All the way.
So if you want to prevent a person from healing, those genetically modified corn products, that might be a good way. So was that a man or a lady you were talking about earlier that recommended the 7 foods to avoid?
It's a woman.
Okay, yeah, but, I mean, doesn't that make great sense, that if you mm-hmm. avoid poisons?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever heard of somebody rush the ER because they had celery.
Right.
In their salad.
Well, you know, on the same line, I have noticed, and this is just weird, probably doesn't have a thing to do with this, but I'll lay in bed at night and I can feel internal tremors.
Oh, man, that's neurological, sister. We've got to find there's some low-grade irritant that's a toxin to your body. And I know this, you're better off without it. Because because if you tell me that all those tremors internally go away and you just have complete peace and there's no longer low-grade irritation where you say, you know what, I feel just a little bit off or a little bit... but see, when you avoid those things, sometimes all the organ systems come right back online again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of you're kind of asking the body, am I better off without this right here? And if the symptoms go away, the body's going, well, yeah. You're very intuitive. I like you.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'll see you this week.
Well, thanks for your call. I appreciate your vote of confidence.
Are you pretty open this week?
You'll just have to call, and we'll go from there, all right?
Okay, sounds good. Have
right.
a blessed day.
You too. Thank you,
bye-bye.
Man. Bye-bye. All right, we've got plenty of time for another phone call. There's about 13 minutes, 20 seconds left. If you'll call 903-586-5257, that didn't sound funny. I've got two girls laughing at me right now. Maybe because I'm smiling as I say that. All right, here we go. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, really. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your phone call.
Okay, it's good, but it's hard to get into you. But I do want to ask you about, I've been told that I have acute bursitis on both of my hips, and I don't know what to do with it because it seems to be getting worse. I took a dose of prednisone, which I really didn't want to take, but nothing's helping. So do you have any ideas that I could use?
All right. Sometimes it's a problem of an over-alkaline bowel, and what you could do is you could try taking a washcloth with apple cider vinegar on it,
mm-hmm.
and you could lay it over the area of bursitis and just kind of let it soak in. And there's a good chance your husband will walk through the room and go, that is the most astounding fragrance of all time, sweetheart. I am down with that.
No.
But you can lay it over that area for about 10, 15 minutes and see if a lot of the swelling goes away. If it does go away, then sometimes what I'll do is I'll use acidic forms of calcium that's made with acids. And sometimes, let me start over here. You could take a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, and you could take a couple capsules of calcium and just dump into it. I did not say this is the most delicious beverage of all time.
I always do a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and water every morning with about 20 ounces of water.
Well, excellent. Well, okay. What you want to add to the equation, try to change the pH of your body,
mm-hmm.
you might want to put about a half of a teaspoon of just plain Jane Arm & Hammer baking soda and tell me if there's a drastic change. The two substances that come to my mind, there is a homeopathic remedy called Arnica Montana. And they sell tubes of it at almost every store. It's called Arnicare. A-R-N-I-C-A-R-E. Arnicare.
Okay.
And it's a homeopathic remedy, and you can apply it exactly to the area of just great, great pain and see if it helps dissolve that inflammation.
Okay.
The other thing that I love using castor oil or olive oil rubbed topically. Now, when it's in the hips, I realize that you probably have nice clothing and you don't want them covered with oil, so you're going to have to use your imagination on how you're going to keep oil on your hips and not get your clothes oily. So that's your homework. You're in charge of that one. The other thing that I've found is extremely beneficial for bursitis is walking barefooted in the yard.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Oh, well, don't stop.
Okay,
now,
shoes.
Let me go back to the technical part of me.
Okay.
Bursitis always occurs because tendonitis occurs first. And what's a hallmark of tendonitis? You wake up in the middle of the night, you roll over and change positions, and it hurts a little bit.
Oh, it hurts a lot.
So, yeah, that was a good call on my part. Hurts a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. A lot worse than that. But see, any time that muscles become tight or short or ropey and not inflamed, you're always most vulnerable to developing either tendonitis or bursitis.
Okay.
And so we might need to do some hip exercises. So you might want to get on YouTube and look up the name Katie Bowman and look at her hip exercises. Very, very simple, very doable for the average person.
Okay. Okay.
As long as your husband pays the electric bill, you can look him up for free.
Good.
But if you don't pay the electric bill, you probably won't be able to look him up.
That's true.
So okay. We're just that trying, was Katie
we're trying
to. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was Katie Bowman.
Katie Bowman, K-A-T-Y, and then Bowman, like Bowman.
Okay, got it.
Okay, good.
Good, all right. And this, that basically starts from the muscles being too tight in the hip joints? That
well,
your...
that, yeah, that's one of the things you have to look okay. at. It's not the only thing. I mean, I can tell you, if a woman's hormones are out of whack,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be more prone to having bursitis right in the hips. But when I say hips, I'm talking about that ball and socket joint. I'm not talking about the sacroiliac joints. That's different. That's more of an adrenal issue usually.
Okay. So, let me see.
Because you have a muscle called the gluteus medius. And when that one, see, if you were here right now, I could take my thumb. It's not that big, so don't get scared.
Mm-hmm.
But I would push into it. And what I'm doing is I'm looking, where is the exact source of pain coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And if I can pinpoint the source of pain, sometimes all I have to do is just put a drop of vinegar on it and see if that kills the pain, because I can just touch before and after. So,
wow.
They're thinking, I mean, it's easy stuff to look at, but
okay.
but I'm trying to pinpoint, is it the iliotibial band? Is it the tensor fascia lata? Is it the sartorius muscle? Is it the gluteus medius, the gluteus minimus?
Okay. There's a peri something muscle. It's a little tiny muscle.
Peri?
Yeah, I can't. It's something. It's in my left hip and eye.
The piriformis.
Yes, that one.
Yeah, but when that one spasms, your foot, okay, if you're standing up straight,
mm-hmm.
normal posture, if your toes are pointing forward, it's not a piriformis problem. But on the side that the piriformis is full spasmed or too tight, your foot's going to flare outward or point outward pretty sharply.
Okay, no, it seems to be doing okay. I'm standing here barefooted looking down.
Oh, man, I've seen, you don't even know how many bad piriformises I've seen. You can't even touch them when they're hot, but... see, if you press, that's called the hollow of the glute. So if you were standing up in the bathroom looking at yourself in the mirror like after you came out of the shower,
mm-hmm.
if you like extend your leg back, you're going to see a little dimple in your gluteus maximus.
Right.
If you push your thumb straight into there, you're going to press right into the piriformis muscle, and that's where the sciatic nerve.
It'll hurt.
Oh, well, I'm not, I don't doubt that. But I don't know that may be just a secondary deal, and that's what
okay.
you're trying to figure out. What's
okay.
primary, what's secondary? Because usually if you work on secondary issues,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you kind of get like a little bit of relief, but just it's like it just keeps dragging on.
Not enough.
I mean, that's why, and don't take this the wrong way, but let's just say that you go to a massage therapist and they keep mm-hmm. rubbing out the piriformis every day for 3 years and nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does feel a little bit better every time you leave.
Right.
But the pain always comes back. Doesn't it tell you that we're dealing with a secondary issue?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Right.
The next question is, if you're barefoot outside, say
mm-hmm.
the back porch or the patio or something,
mm-hmm.
if you keep your feet flat on the ground, can you squat all the way down to the ground, kind of like what an Indian would around a campfire where your bottom is resting against your calf muscles or your Achilles, and keep your
yeah.
feet flat?
No.
Well, if you can't do that, then that just shows me in the chain of command we've got some muscles that are real too. You have a loss of. We just need to improve muscle function.
Okay. Okay.
And there's some muscles we need to probably stretch out a little bit, but we need to greatly improve your hips and your lower back. So that kind of goes into that pelvic area. So if you look at those Katie Bowman pelvic exercises,
okay.
I think you'll tell me you really like them, but I like her a lot.
Okay, good.
I don't like her as much as my wife, though, just in case
I
you
hope
listen.
Not.
I don't. you don't know this, but this morning I have my 9-year-old and I have my 7-year-old, and they are constantly coloring nonstop while I'm yakking away here.
Oh, how precious. What they a blessing it is for you to be able to have them with you.
Oh, well, they just insisted they come, so I woke them up like about 5:45 this morning. I said, let's go. Come on, let's go, girls.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, you said calcium something, but you named it calcium something after.
Well, there's a lot of different forms of calcium that you can use. I think if you use one that's vegetable-based, it's going to be better. I like calcium lactate.
And you
can actually give calcium lactate. There's a lot of other products, but I'm not trying to confuse you. But if you use a vegetable source of calcium,
mm-hmm.
The other things I like, I'm just a huge fan of vitamin C for bursitis.
Okay.
Love it. You want to rapidly, if you bruise easily, we're going to throw zinc into the mix.
You know, I do zinc every day, and I do calcium, and biotin.
Well, and, you know, if I had been real smart, I would have asked you a question. I would say, is there a chance that you have any issues with your gut or your digestive tract?
No, it's wonderful.
Okay,
since
excellent.
I started doing the apple cider vinegar. It's great.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking at is it may be a problem with a weakness in the tendons and the muscles, and you have bursitis as a result. But what we have to do is we have to find a way to resolve that and heal it. So
okay.
try those exercises and let me know what you think about them.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Let's enjoy those daughters. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Nellie, did you want to say hi to the people in the listening?
Yeah, I was going to say hello.
Okay, I think they heard that. Y'all calm down. I'm just joking. If you'd like to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. There's about, I don't know, 2 minutes left, give or take. I know that's not a lot of time, but we can try to make the best of it. All right. Let me try to take this phone call. Let's see what happens. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm calling from Tyler.
All right.
I have had a gout issue, and I have found for me that the cause of that gout is the acid in regular coffee.
Yeah, how about that?
And what I have done is gone to a cold brewed system where I let the ground coffee sit at least 12 hours in a container, and there's a high-density filter that filters out the acid and the caffeine in the coffee. But the taste of the regular coffee is just as good as if I had not done the filtering system.
And so you like it?
Oh, I love this coffee. The taste is just phenomenal. Without the acid and without the caffeine flavor, you still get the caffeine flavor.
Well, what is the system called?
Well, I'm not here to recommend the system by name, but I'll tell you, it's Todd, Toddy.
Toddy, okay. No, I understand. You're just trying to be helpful to other people that have the same problem.
That's right. It is a cold brewed coffee system. And I run a cup through my Keurig to get hot water, and then I add this concentrate to the hot water.
Well, good job. We're all out of time, but I thank you very much for your phone call.
Yes, thank you very much.
Have a good day, buddy. Bye-bye.